श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, श्री श्री गौर राधा माधव की जय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि बोल, श्री कृष्ण जन्माष्टमी महोत्सव की जय, गौर हरि। Welcome to all of you. Good afternoon or good morning, whatever you may be. We are online as well. And today we are celebrating Sri Krishna's Janmashtami, a big celebration, a big journey, if you will, one journey after another. So today we have one particular journey. And let's begin our journey today in First World War for a minute. Let's go to First World War. Yeah, there is some connection with Krishna Janmashtami Samadhi, believe me. Probably we were there, we never know. And in First World War we have the famous story, as he mentioned these days, of Ronald Nixon, who was a pilot for the British Army, and he was intercepted by the German group, and when his plane was going down, he had this feeling, if God exists, he will save me, and if he saves me, I promise to look for him passionately. So since we know the story, it means he was saved. So he was saved, and he realized, okay, God exists, and he heard this voice, look for me in India. I saved you, and I'm waiting for you in India. So eventually he canceled all his duties with the army and all this stuff, and he went to India. And as we know, when he went to India thinking I'll find God here, he found a big arrange of a procession of deities, if you will, an unending parade, an endless pantheon. I thought I will find it quickly, but not. Ganesh was there, Shiva was there, Brahma was there, Krishna, Vishnu, Lakshmi, all the consort, female, male, half animal, all the dasavatar. So he thought, oh, so where to begin now? Where to look? In which direction? And he had that same person that called him, come to India, look for me, gave that insight to him, like, look at them and pay attention to what they are doing. So he looked and he realized, oh, all of them are doing something. Till he reached Krishna, and he realized he's not doing anything. He is, playing. So how do we call playing in Sanskrit? What's the word for play? Lila. So Richard Nixon didn't know that word yet, but somehow he had this intimation. Bhagavan himself was telling him, go in the direction of Leela. You want God, and it's the ultimate. If you want to look for God passionately, where the passion, the way of passion is Raga Marg. So, and the deity corresponding with the way of passion is Krishna Vrindavan. And Krishna Vrindavan is only playing, only absorbed in Leela. So today we are celebrating one of those Leelas. That's why I'm connected with First World War. We are celebrating today Krishna's Janma Lila. Today is Sri Krishna Janmashtami, which is the day, the half moon day in which Krishna performs his Janma Lila, or his divine play of being born, if you will, or being born for the sake of divine play. The birth in itself is part of his play, but the birth is just the beginning of the whole unfolding of his play. So yesterday, maybe not all of you know, but the ones present here know, yesterday we officially concluded our Japa retreat here in Madhavan, in Costa Rica we are. And today and tomorrow, somehow, the retreat continues, overflowing itself, sprinkling us a few more days on Krishna Janmashtami and Dotsava and Srila Prabhupada Tubir Bhava Mahotsav. And one of the main points of our retreat these days, and you yourself made that point when I asked you which was one of the main points or insight, you say, this idea that Krishna is not different from his name. That we hear so many times, but one thing is to hear something, another thing is to have a aha moment or aho moment. So we, by some fortune, had a glimpse of that. Abhinatvam namanamino. Between Krishna and his name, there is no difference. And somehow today, the day of Janmashtami, that notion is becoming more and more apparent, because we have been speaking about the name non-different from Krishna, the name non-different from Krishna, and Krishna is born today. to make that point, okay, here is the appearance of Krishna in this world. If the form of Krishna is appearing into this world today, we are celebrating that, and that form of Krishna is non-different from Krishna as well. As the name is non-different from Krishna, the form of Krishna which is appearing today is Krishna. No? It's non-different from Krishna. So, today I'd like to, with your permission or without it, that's already my new quote recently, without permission or without it, I would like to focus today's discussion in relation to very famous and very important verse of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the 9th verse of the 4th chapter. We are getting there in a few minutes, in which the results of knowing in truth the nature of Krishna's birth and pastimes are extolled. The nature and the results of knowing that. Briefly, no, but mentioned. And we will try to unpack that. But before going to that verse, again, verse 9 of the 4th chapter, let's go through the first 8 verses. I'll be brief, I promise. and then we will enter into verse number 9 and try to say something about that. Because the first 8 verses will give some, as we spoke yesterday, some context to the whole chapter. Chapter 4 is called Gyan Yoga, or the Yoga of Knowledge, in which Krishna will begin speaking about how knowledge is acquired, how knowledge comes to this world, because he's speaking about divine knowledge, revealed knowledge, and how that knowledge basically begins with the principle, as we will see, of avatar and parampara, and the two of them indicating this notion of avaroha panta, or descending path. So the first 8 verses will gradually explain that and build up to verse number 9, which somehow will be the climax of this section of chapter 4. So in the first verse of the chapter 4, Krishna introduces the concept of avatar and parampara. Avatar means, again, from up to down, we explained the other day, divine crossing, if you will, no? Divine descent, not literally incarnation, but divine descent. And he will speak about parampara as well. He will say to Arjuna, begin the chapter saying, this science of yoga that I have been already explaining in the previous chapters was originally in ancient times spoken to me, to Vibhashvan, who is the sun god. So that means, the question is, how old is the sun? A long time ago. And then Vibhashvan explained to Manu, Manu explained to Ishbaku. So Krishna starts to present this idea of avatar, divine descent, and parampara. First he will speak about parampara, and then he will speak about his own coming to this world. So in the second verse, he says, Evam parampara praptami mam rajarsa yobidu sakalini hat mahata yoganashta parampara. And a well-known verse, all of these verses are well-known. He speaks about parampara, sometimes in time, the distribution of this knowledge become lost. Sometimes the chains become interrupted. Ivam parampara imam rajarsa yobidu sakalini hat mahata and yoganashta. And because of that interruption, it seems that the thing gets lost. Of course, it doesn't, but he's mentioning that point in verse number 2. And of course, parampara will be the way to reinforce that. Parampara, sometimes something may come happen in parampara, but the solution to that is parampara. At the same time, always there will be some souls who will come to reinforce, give new life to the spreading of the knowledge. Then in the verse number 3, I'm going quickly as you can see, Krishna will say to tell Arjuna, this same knowledge the same ancient yoga teaching that I spoke to Vibhashwan hundreds of thousands of millions of years ago, the secret knowledge, he used the word rahasyam, which means secret, that same secret I'm imparting to you today, at this precise moment. Because why? And then he presents the adhikar. He says, because you are my bhakta, and because you are my sakha. You are my friend, you are my devotee, you are my friend. And that's why I'm disclosing this confidential truth to you. This is not something for public consumption, but you are my dear friend, you are my dear... because you are my dear devotee, you are my dear friend, the context of being my devotee, I'm sharing this secret to you. So then comes verse 4, when Arjuna takes the word, speaks and asks, wait a minute, Krishna, one moment. Nice, everything you say, but he goes back to verse number 1. You told me that you spoke this ancient yoga system knowledge to Vibhashwan, who is the sun god, but you were born after the sun god. So here Arjuna is speaking not as considering Krishna as the source of the sun god, but someone who was born a few years before. So how is this going on? I mean, how you spoke to the sun god? The sun god is, I mean, apart, nobody, not anyone can instruct the gods. So you instructed the gods, you are my friend, and you spoke that millions of years ago, but you are here now and you were born some years ago. So, of course, questions like this, and this is the dynamic of the Gita and of any Prashnotara, any Sthagosti, any question and answer exchanges, the questions will allow the speaker to further expand the topic, to further unfold and to address some other points. So here with this question, again, Arjuna is addressing Krishna, how this can happen? Explain to me about your birth, basically he's saying. That this will allow Krishna now to speak about his own appearance. As Guru Maharaj likes to say, a gentleman will never speak about himself unless asked. So Krishna is not like, hey, hear about me. No? But Arjuna asks and he then speaks. No? So Krishna will speak now in the next verses about his appearance and the ultimate purpose of his appearance, different levels of purpose. First he will invoke Aishvarya, no? The Aishvarya reasons for his appearance, the majestic justification for his descent. He's God, he's instructing the sun god. I mean, all this is pretty Aishvari. No? I have instructed the sun god from time immemorial. And then after establishing that Aishvarya of the reasons for his descent, then that Aishvarya will allow the Madhurya to happen, the Madhurya reasons to take place. Why I actually come, ultimately, and execute my leela on earth. That will be the ultimate reason for Krishna's Janmalila, as you can imagine, in connection to Vrindavan. But that will have its own consequences, as we'll see. So Arjuna asks this in verse 4. So in verse 5, Krishna starts to reply in Aishvarya terms. So he will say, both of us, you Arjuna and I, passed through many births. I remember all of them, but you don't. So he speaks in, I'm God, you are not, as we said yesterday. I am omniscient. Omniscience means you can omniscience means you can remember all your past births. No? Non-omniscience means you cannot remember what you did 2 hours ago. So first he's speaking about Aishvarya, again, laying the foundation of Aishvarya for the Madhurya reasons to happen. So I am God, I am omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent, these three omnis that correspond with God. So Krishna speaks in these terms. And you are not God, just in case, Arjuna. I am. And this is not for Arjuna, it's for us, just in case you are not God. And then in verse 6, after establishing this Aishvaric general foundation, he starts to unfold the Aishvarya. And in verse 6, Krishna starts to speak about the nature of his birth. I passed through many births, I remember all of them, I instructed the gods and all these type of things. So what's the nature of my birth? Am I born, actually? I am born, but in which sense I am born, in which sense I am not born? So now he will start in sixth verse with the word Aja, which means unborn, and other features, which all of them we will see will culminate in today's main verse. But first, a little minute in these verses. So verse 6, Krishna saying, Aja pisam abhyayatma bhutanam ishvarupisham prakritim swamadhisthaya sambhavami atma mayaya. So he's saying, Aja, first, I'm birthless. Aja, I'm unborn. Although I'm born, Aja, Api, api means although I am unborn, and abhyayatma, I am imperishable by nature. Again, Aishwarya. You won't speak like that to casually in Leela or something. And Bhutanam Ishvaropisham, I am the controller of all living beings, Bhutara, Ishvar, Prakritim Swamadhishtaya, in full control of my material energy, Swambhavami Atma Mayaya. I manifest by my own power. So I appear in this world, which is presided by material energy, but I'm the controller of the material energy. So when I appear in the context of that energy, I'm not being put under the control of it. I appear, or he says, I manifest, sambhavami, I'm not born ordinarily, atma mayaya, by my own energy, means by my swarup shakti. Or also this part, my Guru Maharaj explains in his commentary to this verse, adhisthaya, prakritim swamadhisthaya can mean nevertheless situated in my own form. So I appear in my form. It's not that I take a form. We are forced to take different forms by the force of karma. But Krishna always appears, every time he appears as he himself, that's always the same form, because that form is not his form, it is him. Remember? So he's descending in a spiritual form, spiritual identity, his eternal identity, under the influence of Atma Mayaya, his primary Shakti, his Swarup Shakti. So this is the first time, interestingly, in which the Swarup Shakti, as an aside, is introduced in the Bhagavad Gita, first verse. It will be mentioned a few other times. So, again, we learn in the retreat, Krishna is not different from his name, but here he's making the point, I'm not different from my Rupa. I'm not different from my Nam. Now comes Rupa. Remember, Nam, Rupa, the sequence, Guna, and Leela. So, Krishna is non-different from his body. So, Srila Prabhupada will say, you are not this body, but in relation to Krishna, you have to change the quote. he's not only, it's not that his body is his. He is his body, basically. Absolute consideration. As he is his name, Krishna is his name. Krishna doesn't have a name. He is his name. Krishna doesn't have a form. He is his form. We have to gradually get accustomed to think in those terms. It's a transrational way of even conducting ourselves in our mind. So he is his form, he is his name, and of course he is his guna, he is his lila. All of this, and today we are celebrating Jamna Lila also, and the appearance of his form. So all of this happens on an absolute platform, non-difference, non-dual consciousness, Advaita Gyan Tattva. So in relation to this verse, let me share some words about this verse, and gradually we are getting close to the main one. Of course, the birth of Krishna is not a simple topic, it's a complex one. Again, it's the birth of the unborn, as it was promoted today's lecture somehow in one flyer. The birth of the unborn, it's like, what? No? So he's born, but he's not born. Something like that. Aja. And interestingly, Krishna in the Gita also said before, second chapter, 20th verse, he said that all of us are unborn, actually. Although born, we are unborn. Technically speaking, the soul is not being born. He's saying, Najayate mriyate vakado chinnayam bhutva bhavitavana bhuyaha ayonitya sashvatoyam purano nahanyate hanyamane hasaride. Another well-known verse from the Gita. Krishna is saying, for the soul there is neither birth nor death. The soul has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. No? The soul is. No? Eternally, substance. It's always the same. Of course, there's change in potential, sort of shakti, but that's another level of explaining this. On this level, it's unchanging. No? Aja nitya sashvato yam purano. Ajo means unborn, nitya means eternal, sashvato means permanent, ever-existing, unpremeval. It's not slain with the body's slain. Remember, he's instructing Arjuna in the context of the battle. So we could say, well, Krishna's unborn. I'm unborn also. So actually, there's not much difference between the two of us. So Krishna say, wait a minute. The verse we are studying is not ending there. No. So in order to differentiate himself from the jivas, he then will add, after saying, ajo abhyayatma, which means imperishable. His form is imperishable. Now, although we are not born, we take a form. Yeah, but Krishna's form is imperishable. His nature is imperishable. It's not us. Rupa Guna, ours is not imperishable, it's perishable. But he's always the same, in that sense. Of course, again, on top of that, Krishna is not always the same. He's always become more beautiful and increasing his experience of love in the context of... But we have not reached yet such heights. Let's continue in the Aishvarya level. First Aishvarya, only then Madhurya and the dynamics of Leela can happen. So, and of course in this verse Krishna says, not only I'm born and imperishable in form and nature, I am the controller of all the living entities, Bhuta Nameshwara. So again, we are not that. So he's telling to make this case, just in case we wonder, maybe I am Krishna. Some people have come to that conclusion, so he's making the case to avoid any misreadings of the Gita. Again, the classical example is he's born as the sun is born. The sun is born, but the sun is not born. We know that this just becomes manifest to our sight, and we can see him because he allows us to see him. So similarly, when Krishna appears, it's not that he was not manifest before that. And we can see him because his own shyness is allowing us that to happen. And again, he's appearing sun-like, in sun-like terms, by the strength of his own inner Shakti, his Swarup Shakti, which again is very different to the Shakti that is behind our birth in samsara. Or, my Guru Maharaj makes the point, Atma Mayaya. Atma Mayaya means my own Shakti, or Maya, the word Maya, apart from energy, can mean energy. Maya can mean mercy. So in other words, I come through my own mercy potency, to give mercy, as we will see. As an act of mercy, we will see that's gradually. Now, in the next verse, this will unfold. What's the purpose of his coming? Now we are analyzing what's the nature of his birth. Now, he's not born actually, and all the things, doing through the agency of Swarup Shakti and so on. So before Arjuna could ask, my Guru Maharaj puts in the purport, but if you are birthless and imperishable and all these like fancy things that I believe Arjuna says for sure, why do you choose to appear in this world? I mean, Madhavan is an exception, but in general, it's like, what? Why here? No? So before Arjuna can even ask the question, Krishna will reply in the next verse. No? Sometimes that happens. No? You are hearing a lecture and you have a question, and immediately the one who is speaking, the guru, they say, will address that question. And at the end, you are, oh no, I raised my hand, but it was already replied. Thank you. In this case, Arjuna has a question, but Krishna is anticipating that. So we go to verse 7 now. Another famous verse in which Krishna will say why he's coming to this world, why such a person to this world. And again, in the concept of doing that, explaining Atma Maya, how he comes as an act of mercy and the purpose of his descent. So 7th verse is famous one again. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. So this and the next one are quite tied together. So Krishna is saying, O Bharata, O descendant of Bharata, whenever dharma is diminished and unrighteousness is like on the rise, I myself, at that time, I manifest myself. So he's replying why he comes to this world, because this world needs him to come. Now, this martyrlog, this is a word characterized by, yes, adharma, lack of dharma in many occasions, so there's a need for Bhagavan coming and putting things in order, if you will. That's a more general idea of who God is, again, like the cosmic justice the one who brings justice to the world and so on. So Bhagavan here, Krishna, is starting to reply why he comes to this earth by invoking the secondary purpose of his descent. Now, this is not the main reason, as we will see, why he's coming here. But he begins with the less important one. I come to establish Dharma, to kill the Asuras, to put things in order, This doesn't have to do anything necessarily with bhakti, but especially with those who lack bhakti and are misbehaving. So I have to set them straight, something like that. But as we know, Krishna himself is not the one who is doing this. Krishna of Raj, the ultimate Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan. But that's the Vishnu in him. Establishing Dharma, Yuga Dharma, miscreants. And so, that's Vishnu, Narayan, God. As we will see, Krishna is something more than God. As we know, Krishna is God beyond God. But here he gives the Vishnu-centered reason. I come to establish Dharma, kill the miscreants. And in the next verse, verse number 8, almost there, to the 9th one, verse number 8, another famous verse, Krishna is, although repeating again the secondary reasons, he will mention the first main reason for his descent. And first, before mentioning the other ones. So what does Krishna say there? Paritranaya sadunam vinashya chaduskritam dharma samstapanartya sambhavami yuge yuge. So the word sambhavami is appearing over and over again here because it has to do with manifesting, coming, descending. So Krishna is saying there what? In order to protect my devotees, paritranaya sadunam, and we will explain now what does it mean. And then he said, vinashya chaduskritam, to deal with the miscreants. Dharma samstapanartya, establishing dharma. Again, these two things, dealing with adharma and establishing dharma, we say before. Now he's adding paritranaya sadhana sambhavami yuge yuge. I manifest age after age. So principle of avatar, remember, is brought here into the picture. First, it began with parampara, now avatar. How this knowledge comes to the world. Keep the bigger picture in mind. This chapter is speaking about gyan, yoga, how the revealed knowledge comes here. So again, here establishing dharma and killing the asuras, invoking Sudarshan, if you will, are byproducts of the main reason, are not the main reason why he's coming, are just something that happens as a consequence of the main reason for Krishna's descent that here is mentioned, again, in a general way. We'll try to unpack this. Paritranaya sadhunam. So sadhunam means sadhu, the sadhus in plural. And paritranaya means to protect. So of course the question comes, if you define a sadhu, who is a sadhu, among other things, you will say, well, someone who is surrendered to Krishna. Not you cannot deserve that label, if you will, sadhu. And which is one of the aspects of surrender to Krishna, saranagati. What's the third one? Don't count the first and the second. Go straight to the third one. Yeah. So that means, rakshishyati vishwas, so means?
Krishna is my only protector.
Yeah. You have vishwas, which means trust, confidence. Krishna will protect me. So that's a sadhu, among other things, of course. So if a sadhu has full confidence, Krishna will protect me. Why is Krishna saying here, I come to protect my sadhu? If they already have full trust that they will protect him, it's not that they need him for coming up. The sadhu feel, Krishna is protecting me. So what does Krishna mean here? The point is, when he says, I come to protect those who have full confidence that I will protect. And I'm already protecting them. That's the point. It's not that they are in danger. You need to, but still there is something Krishna needs to personally come to protect them. And that's because those particular sadhus are in such an advanced stage that they can no longer survive without having Krishna's personal audience, darshan. And that's why he has to come personally to protect, to save them. Not to save them from an asura or from some tsunami or anything, and all these clashes. No, but to save them from themselves, if you will. They are undergoing the pain of separation, like my Guru Maharaj likes to put, the dark night of the soul is becoming so thick that in their absence, in their direct association, they are feeling the absence of that, and Krishna needs to come. So this is more applied to those sadhana siddhas, those devotees perfected by practice, as we know. One application of this idea is that those who reach such a level of advancement, they are born on earth in the place where Krishna is performing his lila, and they will have that personal darshan. So basically the idea is, when Krishna is saying in this verse, I come to protect my devotees, he's not just referring to any devotees. To all devotees, of course, but there's some specificity implied there. So we will get there, especially in the next verse. So in this way, having explained in the first 8 verses, the nature of Krishna's birth, the purpose of his descent, in general, at least, these reasons, secondary reasons, main reasons, and the nature of his birth, not being born actually, being transcendental. Krishna next, in verse number 9, which is our main verse today, he will, explain the result of understanding this, of understanding why Krishna comes, of understanding why we are celebrating Janmashtami today. He will explain that in general. Again, we will try to, today we will try to get more specific about that. So finally, we got to our today's main verse, which is verse number 9. Another famous one. Janma karma chame divyami banjyo vetti tattvattaha tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mam iti su Arjuna. So what Krishna says here to Arjuna? He's saying, one who truly understands, and this word will be very important today, truly, tattvattaha, one who truly understands the nature of the divine nature, of my birth and activities, divya karma, divya janma, that person is not reborn upon giving up his body, her body, but comes to me. Oh Arjuna. Oh, for sure. So this is today's main birth. And Krishna is saying, janma karma chame divya, my birth and my activities are divya, are divine. Evanjo beti tattvataha. Once who knows beti, this truly tattvataha, punarjanma tattvadeha punarjanma, when leaving this body, punarjanmana, they don't return here, but naiti mameti swarjana, they come to me. So that's the fruit of understanding what we are celebrating today. What's the nature of Krishna's birth, Janmashtami? You will go to Krishna. So hopefully you are in the right place celebrating today's event, because the result of that, it will be, you will be promoted to the ultimate goal. That's the potency of celebrating Janmashtami. That's what Srila Rupa Goswami mentions when he gives the 64 angas of bhakti. There one is to engage in celebrations of festivities such as Janmashtami. So we have to go deeper into this. It's not just like, oh, I don't know what to put in this 64 list. I have to fill with some other things. Celebrate Janmashtami. That's also part of it. No, no. There's a deep reason for that. Again, this is a highlight here. If you properly celebrate Janmashtami, you attain Krishna. That's a powerful anga. Celebrate Janmashtami. Of course, that happens once per year, in one sense. So it's important that we... That's why Vaishnavas try to focus, especially in those moments, Gopurnim, Radhastami, Janmashtami, and so on, because there's some condensed power in going through those celebrations. Again, not just the external emotions of that. No, that's why I always say devotees, Janmashtami is not about fasting till midnight or about tasting 108 preparations, or that, about all these things, but it's about understanding what's happening today. Why Krishna is born, the reasons for that. And as we will see throughout our class, give me some time, what's our role in it? How all that thing have to do with us? And when you really make full circle with that, voila! You attain the ultimate goal by celebrating Janmashtami. And then you understand, oh, that's why Rupa Goswami included that in the list. Such a powerful anga. So it's not just let's have party or something. It's a very deep moment. So let's try to explain this verse, today's verse, and try to play out the implications of that, which are lots of them. So bear with me. You're already accustomed to go through some lengthy classes these days, so if still there is some momentum, I will take advantage of that. So to begin with, Srila Jiva Goswami and other commentators, when commenting on this verse, they will quote another verse from the Bhagavatam when Gajendra is praying. The famous elephant Gajendra and the famous prayers of Gajendra, Bhagavatam 8:3-8. So Gajendra, interestingly, in that verse, he's praying to that person. He's praying to the Absolute, but in the prayer he's addressing He who is formless, nameless, and without qualities nor attributes, the Absolute, generic Absolute, no? To the sand. Because remember, he's been beaten by crocodile and about to die, and somehow he was in his previous life again. Anyhow, in Radyumna Maharshi, long story short, he remembers some prayers and he prays as an elephant for the Absolute to come and save him. No? He said, Na vidyate yasya cha janma karma va na nama rupe guna dosha eva va. No, he who has no nam, no karma, no janma, no rupa, no guna, he who has no form, no qualities, no name, no birth, no activities, please descend. And in response to those prayers, interestingly, that there comes an interesting thing, in reply to those, if you want to call it negative prayers, nameless, formless, in that sense negative, I mean, Vishnu appears, replete with form, names, qualities, attributes, everything. So the question is, what's going on? No? Because he called someone, maybe someone else appeared. No? Because he called someone without name and someone with name here came. Someone without form he called, someone with form came. But no, Jiva Goswami concludes, Gajendra prayed for that who is formless because he acknowledged that Bhagavan has no material form. He called he who is nameless because he acknowledges God doesn't have a material name, and so on. Mm-hmm. So all the things. And that's why many times in scripture this is mentioned like that. No? So God is formless because he has no material form. Krishna is birthless in this because his appearance in the world is not material birth. In that sense, he has no form, name, rule, qualities. No? All of them are transcendental. They're not from this. That's the main point. And in Shastra, I'm making this point because you will go through scriptures and many times you will find God has no name, God has no form. But then on another section say, these are his names and unlimited form, so how to make sense of the two? He has no form and names in the material sense. All of them are divya. This verse is saying that. Janma karma cha me divyam. So Krishna says, my janma, my birth, my karma, in this case means activities, are divya, divine, transcendental. Brahma says something similar in the Bhagavatam 2.7.29, he said, Tat karma divyamiva. The activities of Bhagavan are divyam. Divya karma. Tanai way for lilas, we will say. Divya karma. Divine action. While commenting on this verse, Ramanujacharya also, this says that the word divya means aprakrita, which is, of course, for us Gaudiyas, an interesting term, because aprakrita means mundane. So aprakrita means something that seems to be mundane, but on a closer look is totally super transcendental, even beyond overt transcendence. So Krishna's name, here he's using the word divya, which means aprakrita. Aprakrita means Krishna's birth seems mundane, but it's super mundane. His action seems ordinary. No? Ordinary look, you will think he's a thief, a liar, a womanizer. You see, it doesn't seem like too transcendental. Closer look, aprakrita. And Ramanujacharya also say this term, divya, means that activities and birth of Bhagavan are eternal. In other words, they are always the same, unchanging, or also we could say they are eternal. They are always happening somewhere. As we say yesterday, many places at the same time, simultaneously. Or again, his birth is eternal, basically means Krishna does not undergo any transformation. As an ordinary person, leaving a temporary body behind, taking a new, different one, he's born in his eternal body. That would be the idea. He's born in his eternal form. Again, you have to get accustomed to thinking those terms with God. So, allow me to recap for a minute what we have seen so far, because now we will enter the deeper section of this. No? So till now, again, we spoke about the importance of understanding Krishna's birth. So first, in verses 6, Krishna said, I'm not born. So that's the first part to understand that his birth, that actually he doesn't take birth in the ordinary sense of the term. materially speaking. He comes through his internal potency. That's one layer of understanding Janmashtami. That's one step close to getting to Krishna by understanding Janmashtami. He's not actually born in the ordinary sense. He comes through his Swarup Shakti. Then, why he comes in that way? Well, that was said in verse 7 and 8. He comes, secondary reasons, help me, why he comes. Secondary reasons, we mentioned two. And? Annihilate. Yeah, count, it's two sides of the same coin. No? Establish Dharma, counteract Adharma. So that's another layer of understanding why he comes. One step closer to Bhagavan now. You feel closer? Secondary reason. But above that, then in verse 8, Krishna says, what paritranaya sadunam? On top of that, a more confidential reason is, I come to protect my devotees. Or we could say by extension, to interact with my devotees, as we will see, because some of the devotees are dying in separation from him, but also there will be the nityasiddhas of his eternal associates, and they are always with him. So, but he also comes to interact with them on earth and establish something for us as a byproduct. So we could add on top of that there, another reason for Krishna's birth again is to interact with his devotees, and we could add to that and the Brajavasis in particular. Well, he has many devotees, but our Gaudiya perspective will be especially he's coming for his Brajavasis, or for those who want to be his Brajavasis. So one step closer to Krishna by properly understanding Janmashtami. And this verse again is saying that person who understands all this, which means who has faith in this also, that means understand doesn't mean just like brain exercise, but whose heart is in the right place, has proper Shastriya Shraddha, proper faith, conviction about this, the result is he attains liberation and comes to me. So here comes an interesting point. Krishna is saying, punar janmana, not taking birth again, means, it's tantamount to mukti, generally. No? Mukti is conceived as, you are not born again in this world, you transcend samsara. But Krishna presents another idea of mukti here. He says, punar janmana vidyate itis naiti mam sorjuna. He says, that person is not born again into this world, but comes to me. Follow. So you are. That's his idea of mukti. Mukti is not only being not being born here, but going somewhere else. And what's that somewhere else? Because it comes to me. That's mukti for us. Of course, there are other forms of mukti we don't subscribe to. But here is Krishna's version of mukti. If you are interviewing him, what's mukti for you? Come to me personally. He's pointing to himself. And for us, it's mam ekam sharanam braja. Come to me. As the conclusion of the Gita is, come to me, mam ekam sharanam, come to me exclusively, braja. The word braja means come, but also the normal meaning for us is braja. So come to me to braj. That will come at the conclusion of the Gita. So for Krishna, mukti or not being reborn means coming to me. Attaining Krishna's true liberation, in other words. That's real mukti. As Guru Maharaj explained last previous Sunday, this verse of the Bhagavatam, Tatinu kampam srishamikshama no bunjane vatmakritam vipakam hippad baput bidadham namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadaya vak. I won't go into the details of this famous story of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya crossing the word mukti. I don't like to read mukti anymore. I'm converted by your grace, O Prabhu. So I cannot even hear the word now. Before I was a fanatical of mukti. Now I'm fanatical against mukti. I cannot read the word. No. And he put bhakti. And Mahaprabhu said, no, no need to cross the word to change the Bhagavatam. The word mukti can refer to bhakti. Ultimately, bhakti is the ultimate liberation. Because in mukti, you still have this desire, I want to be liberated. In bhakti, you don't have any selfless desire, ultimately. So bhakti is liberation from liberation. So you get liberated from this desire of being liberated. Akama sarvakamo bhamukta akamo dharadi. The Bhagavatam is saying, some people have all desires, some people have only one desire, mukti, and some people have no desires, my devotees. And it's another way of saying they are full of desire for my sake. So the idea here is, so then you won't, by understanding Janmashtami, you are not reborn, you attain me. When leaving this body, Vishwanatha Chakravartakur, in his Sarartha Bharshini commentary, he goes one step further and says, Krishna actually means, you attain me even without giving your body, giving up your body. Before giving up your body, you already attain me, Krishna is saying. You attain that position even in this life. That's the power of bhakti. As we say, it can eliminate all prarabdha karma even. You don't need to wait for leaving this world or anything like that. You're already there. Krishna cannot wait. No, that's the point. No? I won't wait for you to leave your body and attain videha mukti, or that's some other people call. I want you now. So this is a general explanation of this verse 9, and all the other previous verses from 1 to 8. Now let's get specific. Let's go to the details. So this was just like, how do you say, when you put the car before starting?
Warming up.
We are warming up. Now the real journey will begin. So I hope you have some stamina, you say, some strength for that. So let's get specific. This was a general notion of why Krishna is born, the nature of his birth, the result of understanding that. But again, the word tattvataha is in this verse, which means one who truly understands this. So what Krishna means truly? What must it be, the word truly, for someone like Krishna? It's not just one more word. Again, it's not just to fill in the meter of the shloka. So let's get specific, because we belong to the Raga Marg, which is, as I like to say, the path of specificity. So if you belong to the path of specificity, let's get specific as much as we can. Always, let's be obsessed with specificity. That's the way to counteract all the impersonalism that still may be in us. Let's be specific. So in this way, in which direction I would like to be as become specific? In the direction of this single word, tattvataha, from this verse. Janma karma chamedi vyami banjo veti tattvataha. When Krishna says, he who understands truly the nature of my birth and activities, this and this happens. So what does Krishna mean truly? What does it mean to truly understand the divine nature of Krishna's birth and lila? Again, it's not just about participating in the feast externally. It may take some time. It may take a few janmastamis. No problem. There is time. So what's the meaning of truly understanding the birth of Krishna, which is basically tantamount to does it mean to truly understand what janmastami is about? Because janmastami is about the birth of Krishna. So what does it mean to understand today's celebration? So let's try our best, some digging in that direction. So as we mentioned, the replies to verse 9 of this verse, again, in verse 9, Krishna said, what's the result of understanding my birth, the divine nature? So, of course, in the previous verses, we could say that's included. Now, to understand the divine nature of Krishna's birth, verse 9 means, verse 6, to understand that he's unborn, that's part of that, but he's born through his Swarup Shakti. That's pretty confidential understanding. To understand the nature truly of his birth means verse 7, he comes from these secondary purposes, establishing dharma, contract a dharma. To understand in truly tattvataha the nature of his birth, verse 8 means because he comes to paritranaya sadunam, to protect his devotees. And also verse 9 in itself, again, is speaking about Krishna's birth and activities as Divya Karma. So Divya Karma, again, means another word for Divya Karma is? Lila. Remember, divine action, we translate it as play. So let's stop there for a moment. Let's stop in the word Lila, because that's an important word. We began the whole narrative today with World War I and Lila. Lila coming there. The God who is only playing. So the word Divya, no? Lila and Divya Karma. No? Divya Karma. Divya means?
Divine.
And which other word comes to your mind in connection to Divya?
Deva.
Deva. Here we have our Sanskrit Panditji. No? Deva. And Deva, what's the root of the word Deva? Dhatu. Div. And what does mean? What does div means? You have to tell that one as well. You have all of us on the edge of our seats now.
Oh, I can't remember.
Thank you so much. The Madhumbasis are supporting each other. So div means to play. Interestingly, my Guru Maharaj makes this point. He has made this point at least 16,108 times. So next time, please, you remember that one. When he asks you in the class, so you know what to say. So the word to div means to play. And deva, which generally is translated as God, means he who plays. And divya means deva-like, which means divine. So has the word play is included in this idea of divya, the word lila. And so divya, again, has to do with deva. Deva has to do with div. Div has to do with play. And yesterday we explained the word devata in Sumati's question, remember? Devata praya. It was yesterday, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Almost everyone are devatas, but also devata can refer to those who are engaged in play. Because not only Krishna is deva, or deva-deva, as Arjuna calls him, the one who plays the most, but play means lila, and for lila, someone else has to be there. Krishna cannot engage in lila by himself. No? Brahman, the absolute, by himself, without anyone else, is not engaging in lila. We don't never hear Brahman lila, or something like this. No, Nirvishesh lila, or something. It's an oxymoron. So, as Krishna is deva, his companions can be considered as devatas also, because they are playing. They are engaging in lila. Lila means loving interaction between God and his associates. That's lila. Mm-hmm. So, divya, karma, lila, div means to play. And he who only plays, going back to Richard Nixon, Swami Sri Krishna Prem, eventually he became Swami Sri Krishna Prem, I didn't mention that. He concluded that. He who only plays must be God. Of course, my Guru Maharaj adds to this that play requires power, and for you, the one who plays the most must be the most powerful feature. So in Krishna we find the highest Aishwarya and the highest Madhurya, the highest intimacy and the highest power, majesty. So here, birth and lila, in this verse, remember, we are all unfolding the implication of verse 9 of 4th chapter of the Gita, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. I should have written that in the whiteboard, sorry. Or you should have known already that by heart. But that's another thing, no problem. Next time, next Janmashtami, 1 year I give you to memorize that verse. That's pretty generous. So here, Janma and Karma, birth and Lila, are mentioning as Divya, the two. My Janma is Divya, my birth is divine, my Karma, my activities are Divya, are divine. They are mentioned one after another. Janma, karma, chame divyam. So there are two. The two of them are mentioned because the two are interconnected, as I mentioned before. No? In which sense? Well, first you have to have janma so you can have karma. No? First you have to be born, have a body, so you can engage in play. So Krishna is taking birth, janma, to engage in karma, divya karma, lila. And he is taking birth, as we all see now, he's taking birth ultimately as Braja Krishna. Now we'll start to unfold this idea of, but Krishna was born in Mathura. Wait a minute, we'll go there. Primarily, Krishna is born in Vrindavan as Braja Krishna to engage in lila, exclusively. The word lila, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, is ascribed to Krishna more than any other form of God. Generally, you don't hear the word Narayan lila. Or if you speak about Varaha Lila, you may count one, two Lilas. No? But with Krishna, I mean, everything is Lila. You cannot take out the word Lila. You cannot say Krishna without the word Lila. They follow. He's Lila from tip to toe. No? He's Lila, Lila Purushottam. Actually, that's the name of one name of Krishna. Ram is Mariat Purushottam. Mahaprabhu is Prem Purushottam. Krishna is Lila Purushottam. The Supreme Person only doing Lila. So this word is ascribed to him most than any other person. So this word, lila, again, reaches its maximum zenith, the maximum zenith is in Vrindavan, reaches its zenith in Braja Krishna, again. Not in Narayan, not in Varaha, and not even in Dwarka Krishna or in Mathura Krishna. There are Leela there, of course, we speak about Dwarka Leela, Mathura Leela. But again, Leela means play. So the play-like mood, the dynamics is in Braj. Or he's totally forgotten of his divinity and he can only engage in play. For you to play, you have to forget about all these responsibilities of being a big man and the boss of the company, so you can just throw yourself to the ground and play with your grandson and forget that you are the president of the United States or something. So Krishna's only doing that in Vrindavan, only absorbing play, frolicking and running and dancing and rolling on the ground and crying. And so, you follow my point? So, ultimately in Braj, Krishna in particular, Leela attains its greatest level of exhibition. There's Leela with Krishna in Mathura and in Dwarka, but that's not the same as in Vrindavan. In Mathura and Dwarka, he shows his godhood. He's aware of that. He interacts on that basis at times on some level. In Vrindavan, it's not happening. Even when that's coming to the surface and he's lifting Govardhan or doing some extraordinary thing, the prem of the Vrajavas is such that it's burying all that Aishwarya over and over again. The whole Vrindavan is like a cemetery of Aishwarya. All is buried under the ground. It's there. It's full. It's buried, but Madhurya is there alive. No? But there is some. That's the only cemetery you will find in Braj. Nobody's dying in Vrindavan, but Aishwarya is buried. Sometimes you have this word, the death coming alive, and it's coming, some arm of Aishwarya coming, but Brajavasa Prem is like, again, go back to your place, you Aishwarya. So in this sense, again, the greatest exhibition of Krishna's Leela, the word Leela, the total meaning of the word Leela is found in Braj, and is found in Braj Krishna. So another mystery to unfold in today's day, again, we are speaking about tattvataha, truly know what does it mean that Krishna is born, and born in Braj, that comes another mystery. Krishna not only is coming for the pleasure of his devotees, main reason, mainly for the pleasure of the Vrajavasis, but on top of that, he is a Vrajavasi himself. Because he can come and for the pleasure of the Vrajavasis, but he was born in Mathura. No. Another layer of mystery and getting closer to Krishna by properly celebrating Janmashtami is he is a Vrajavasi. He is the son of Nanda and Yashoda. And he's not ultimately the son of Vasudeva and Devaki in his ultimate form. That's a secondary Krishna, Vasudev Krishna, an expansion by Bhav Prakash. That's by Bhav Prakash. Similar to Krishna, but not that similar. Remember, Vasudev Bhakti saw Krishna with four arms at one point. That's not Krishna in Braj, I can tell you. So, popularly, Krishna is known as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, but intimately, confidentially, he's the son of Nanda and Yashoda. There are many verses in the Bhagavad, and we quoted some of them these days, in which Krishna is referred, Nanda, Krishna spoken about to Nanda in terms of Atmaja. Atmaja means he who had the Janma from your Atma, from your body. Atma means body also. So he who is born from you. So Bhagavatam many places, no? Bhagavatam 10.5 verses 1 and 2, Bhagavatam 10.7.16, many more. The word Atmaja is there, Atmaja, Atmaja, which means Krishna is born from the body of Nanda. No? Krishna is Nanda's son. He's born in Vrindavan. So we explain how that happened. I won't enter into the details today. That will be a separate lecture. But as we know, Krishna's born in the prison house of Kamsa from Devaki and Vasudev. But that's an expansion of Krishna, Vasudev Krishna. Simultaneously at that same time, in today's midnight, if you will, Krishna is born simultaneously in his original form from the womb of Yashoda, being the son of Nanda and Yashoda, along with Yogamaya. So, and when Vasudev is carrying Vasudev Krishna on his head from the prison to Vrindavan to make the exchange for the girl, basically, as we know, the Goswamis are explaining how the Vasudev Krishna, which is the expansion, is merging into the original Krishna. Because all expansions of Krishna are residing in the original one. And he takes the girl back. But Krishna was already born in Braj. So Krishna is a Brajvasi. Not only the Bhagavatam is saying, Nanda Maharaj is saying, but everyone, the gopis, highest authorities, they are saying that in the very beginning of the Gopi Gita. They are singing. The very first verse begins like that. Jayati te dhikam janmana braja trayata indira saswadatrahi daita drishyatam dikshuta bokas twaidrita savas tambichin bote. So the very first line of this verse, Jayati te adhikam janmana braja. The gopis are singing in separation of Krishna. You who are janma, whose janma braja is in Braj. No? So they are establishing also, you are born in Braj. No? Of course, someone may say, but Maharaj, there is three verses after that in the Gopi Gita. It seems that the gopis are denying that. Fourth verse says like this. Nakalu gopika, and so on. Nandano bhavam akhila dehina antaratmadrik vikana sartito vishwaguptaye sakhau deivam satvatam kule. So, the general meaning of this verse, of course, apparently, there's a general meaning, as usual, and there's another meaning. In the general meaning, the gopis are addressing Krishna, Sakhav, friend, in separation, Gopi Gita. You are not actually the son of Yashoda, they are saying. But you are actually the indwelling witness in the hearts of everyone. So they start to speak, apparently, as in full Aishvarya. And you are in the hearts of everyone. Because Brahma prayed for you to come and protect the universe, you have now appeared in the Satvata dynasty. And the Jadu dynasty. So this person is like, oh, wow. They're, and you can imagine the Charas will present 108 meanings to this verse. So one meaning, of course, can be the gopis suddenly speak in terms of Aishwarya, but that Aishwarya is only nourishing their madhurya, their call for Krishna separation. You are actually not the son of Yashoda, you are God. Let's be honest. And you came for this or this or this, and they call him Sakat, and oh, friend, oh, God, friend. Appear. That's one meaning. But another meaning in this connection, which in one sense goes in another direction, the verse starts saying, Na kalu gopika. So na, the word na is means na, not, not. And Sanskrit lends itself, as you may know, that you can change the order of the words, and one word can apply to certain words or to other words. So if you take the ordinary meaning is Na kalu gopika nandano babam. You are not the son of Yashoda. But some acharyas will say, the word na, actually does not apply to the first line. It applies to the rest of the verse. So it will say, you are indeed the son of Yashoda, which again proves Krishna is a Vrajavasi. And then comes all the other lines. You are not the indwelling witness in all hearts. No, you are not coming because Brahma prayed for you to protect the universe, and you are not part of this Satvata dynasty. You are not this big fellow some other people may say you are. So in this way, the gopis are... It's a Madhuri interpretation of the verse, not the Aishwarya one. The Aishwarya one is also Madhurya, because it's nourishing their Madhurya. But the point that this interpretation of the verse makes is, you are not coming to the world because Brahma is calling you, because to establish Dharma and all this stuff. You came here for the Vrajavasis only. And you are the son of Yashoda. You are one of those. You are one. We are a Vrajavasi yourself. You are one of them. You're one of us, the gopis are telling. So that will be the meaning of this section. So, or even some people will say, no, Maharaj, I've read in Shastra and I've heard many times that Krishna is the adopted son of Nanda and Yashoda. Now let's set the thing straight. Now he's born from Vasudeva and Devaki in Mathura, and yes, he's then carried to Vrindavan, and he's adopted there. That's Sridhavaji Gopal ki jai. And I won't change my mind, Tama may say. He's adopted. He's not born in Vrindavan. I don't follow the Goswami, whatever. Because if you follow the Goswami, you cannot make an argument. They make it very clear. And there are lots of quotes in Shastra. But anyhow, let's say that someone wants to stake, he's an adopted son of Nandan Yashoda. And I'll say, okay, he's adopted son of Nandan Yashoda. That somehow further highlights the love of the Brajavasis for him, basically. No, the love of Nandan Yashoda is such that Krishna becomes their son. Although he's not, if you want to think like that, nonetheless, by the force of their love, he becomes their son. And this is established in when the Brajavasis meet in Kurukshetra. Yesterday we mentioned this meeting in Kurukshetra in the solar eclipse. And at that time, Krishna is there with the Yadus and Devaki. And he's known as Devaki Nandan, Devaki Sutta. But Yashoda comes with such vatsalya, and Krishna runs to her, he runs to him, she runs to him, he runs to her. And Krishna jumps into Yashoda's lap. He's more than 100 years at that time. But he's always looked young, of course. And Yashoda starts to breastfeed him. You can imagine how old was Yashoda. And Devaki witnesses that. And she says to Yashoda, to Yashoda, you are actually Krishna's mother. I'm known as Krishna's mother, but you are Krishna's mother. So she herself is acknowledging that. You get my point. So even if you want to say Krishna is adopted by them, that further highlights their vatsalya. Mm-hmm. The relationship, he's their son, not because biologically it is so, if you want to think like that, but because of the affection. Mm-hmm. That's the real thing, actually. That's how relationships are established. In this world, it doesn't work like that. In this world, first there is a relationship, and there comes a feeling, generally. No? Okay, he's my brother, so well, I'm supposed to love him. He's my brother. He's there already. I mean, they are my parents. He's my son, so I should love him. First is the relationship, and then comes the feeling. But here we find the opposite. Even if you want to think Krishna is not the son of Nandan Yashoda, in terms of relationship, he is in terms of feeling, and that's all that it counts. For example, as we spoke the other day of Baladev Purnim, Balaram is the brother of Krishna, right? Mm-hmm. So is Balaram the brother of Krishna? Mm-hmm. Biologically speaking? Who is Balaram's mother and father? Rohini and Vasudev. So if you say that Krishna is born from Nandan Yashoda, they are not brothers. Why you call them brothers? Again, because that's the feeling. We don't care if there is blood relationship or not. There is feeling, and that's what it counts. Mm-hmm. Again, Nandan Yashoda may be the adopted parents if you want to take that stance. We don't, but if you would like, in a moment of whimsical madness. Okay, we have an explanation for that, no problem. That will further highlight that. Or the gopis. The gopis love Krishna, but legally they are not Krishna's wives or anything. But the feeling is there. Relationship is not there. It cannot be there. It's clandestine in the underground, but the feeling is there. So all the many of the main relationships in Vrindavan work in that way. There's no relationship. There is feeling. Everything follows after the feeling. That's the idea. First feeling, then everything follows accordingly. So again, this is another layer of tattvataha. Remember the word tattvataha in this verse of the Gita we are explaining? Truly understanding the birth of Krishna. One extra layer of truly understanding Krishna's birth is Swayam Bhagavan, Sri Krishna is not only coming to protect his devotees and interact with the Brajavasis, but he's an eternal Brajavasi himself. That's another layer of understanding Janmastami. Krishna is a Brajavasi. He was born in Vrindavan. That's his Abhiman. Abhiman means, how do you feel yourself, who I am? If you ask, who are you? Krishna will say, I'm a Brajavasi. That's his. He doesn't think in Vrindavan, I'm God, all this type of thing. Everyone feels he's a Brajavasi, and the most wonderful thing is, he feels the same, by the strength of how they feel for him. So he's a Brajavasi, and being a Brajavasi, of course, he has no other business than to satisfy the senses of the Brajavasis, the desires of the Brajavasis. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami makes that point. Krishna says, Satyakari, Yei Magi Vritya, Vritya Bancha, Purti Vinu Nahi Anya Kritya. Which basically means, whatever a pure devotee, this is a general statement that applies the most to the Brajavasis. Whatever impure devotee wants from his master, the master in this case, Krishna, will, without a doubt, will grant that wish. Again, if it comes from a pure devotee. If you don't have pure devotion and wish something which is not wood for your pure devotion, Krishna will grant something different. So you can eventually ask for pure devotion. And he concludes saying, Vritya Bancha Purti Vinu Nahi Anya Kritya. Krishna has no other business than to fulfill the desires of his devotees. He's too occupied with it. He has no time for anything else. His agenda is packed with just satisfying the wills of all his devotees. And again, this is especially so in Vrindavan. So we could say, okay, Bhagavan Sri Krishna comes exclusively for this. Main reason, ultimate, final purpose of Janmashtami. He's born as a Vrajavasi for the sake of the Vrajavasis. And all the other things are incidental functions. Establishing Dharma, counteracting a Dharma, this and that, these more Aishwaric notions. He's unborn, he's actually not born, and all the things. All the things are performed again by other forms of the God inside of Swayam Bhagavan. When Swayam Bhagavan comes, all the manifestations of God come inside him. So if the demon needs to be killed, the Vishnu inside Krishna will kill the demon. But Krishna is not touching, entering in touch with that. He's absorbed Lila Purushottam. So in this way, we could say Krishna is coming just to relish love with the Brajavasis. As an extension of that, the example of that relishing will remain in the world as an example to aspire for by us sadhaks. This is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prema rasa niriyasa kurite ashwadan. Raga Marga Bhakti Loki Karite Prachanam. So Krishna is saying, I'm coming to this world Prema Rasa Niriyasa Karite Ashwadan. To Ashwadan, to relish Prema Rasa Niriyasa, the ultimate mellows of divine love. Krishna is coming to Vrindavan as a Vrajavasi to relish that. And as a byproduct of that, Raga Marga Bhakti Loki Karite Prachanam. The Raga Marga, Raga Nuga Bhakti will be established in the world. Because why? Raga Nuga Bhakti is based on hearing, speaking, and remembering the loving interaction between Krishna and the Brajavasis. So, in that way, Krishna, Braja Krishna in his Leela, establishes the Raga Marga by performing his Leela and setting some reference that eventually will be aspired for and followed by the sadhakas. So, you follow till now? Okay, we will enter now the conclusion section. Breathe deeply, some pranayams, some recycling of your life energy. Don't leave me at this point of the journey, please. You can do it, Lisa. I know you can do it. If not, Bhakti Rasa next to you will send shock treatment. No problem. So Krishna's coming. Again, you could say the ultimate reason for Krishna's birth and mastery is just to engage in loving interaction with his Brajavasi devotees, both those who aspire to become Brajavasi eternally, both who are his eternally Nitya Siddha Parikars, Ragatmika Brajavasis. That's his only duty as Braja Krishna absorbed in Leela. But there are some other purposes to his descent, which will manifest during his descent, which were not in the mind of Krishna when descending, if you want to put it like that. The descent of Krishna to Vrindavan, the birth, the Janmashtami, brings some unexpected consequences to Krishna, which will give, to the birth of Krishna, will add some further reasons that he himself, again, will discover during his very appearance, in his Leela. I came for this reason, but now another reason is coming, another purpose is coming, which adds to the implications of Janmashtami. And all of this will add to the word tattvataha. Remember this main word, truly. What does it mean to truly understand all that Krishna Janmashtami means? All that, why Krishna came, but also what happened after he came, and is there something else in that connection? So in this connection comes to mind a very nice, crucial verse from Brahma Stuti, which we'll be continuing our study in a few days. So you can cancel your flights and stay with us, no problem. And this verse is verse 35. We are reaching the end of the Brahma Stuti. Brahma Stuti are 40 verses. And this is verse 35, which was the last verse that we studied in my last class in Switzerland a few weeks ago. And Brahma, after 4 or 5 verses in which he uses the word aho repeatedly, verse like 30 to 34, in every verse will be the word aho, which is an exclamation of astonishment. By witnessing the position of the Brajavasis, the good fortune of the Brajavasis, aho bhagyam, aho bhagyam, and so on. And after mentioning the glory of the Brajavasis, and he wants to be a Brajavasis, you know, he wants to enter into the circle of friends, the Sakyamandal. So he is astonished by witnessing that, and he concludes his astonishment, or his astonishment reaches a peak with this verse, which will have a lot to do with Janmashtami. So the verse is like this. Isham ghoshanivasinam mutabhavam kindeva ratitinas or devadar chitu vishvapulat phalam tvadaparam kutrapyayan mohyati bewilderment sadvi shadiva putana pisakula tvameva deva pita again deva yadhamarta suhrit priyatmatanaya pranasayas tvatkriti. So Brahma says, we are in Brahma Vimohan Lila, so Brahma is already bewildered, but now he's attaining a higher bewilderment. He's upgrading his astonishment. So he says to Krishna, my mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. First bewilderment. You are the crest jewel of all treasures. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So, now comes the real question, what is left for you to give these devotees of Raj, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives, and hearts are all dedicated one-pointedly only to you? So this is a famous verse and famous question of Brahma. Like he's saying, you are the topmost reward, and you gave yourself as a reward to Putana a few days after you were born. And she tried to kill you. And there, how you reciprocated? You gave yourself to her. You gave her Patsalya Prem, Prem. So if you give someone Prem, you are giving yourself to that person, because wherever there is Prem, there you are. So you gave yourself to Putana a few days after you were born. So if you give someone to something to someone, you cannot give that same thing to someone else then. So you already gave yourself to Putana. So now but you are the highest reward. So what reward will you give to the Brajavasis? You gave yourself to Putana who wanted to kill you. And so what you will give to the Brajavasis, because they are willing to kill themselves in your service. They didn't want to kill you. They're willing to kill themselves for your sake. So if you gave yourself to someone who wants to kill you, what you will give to someone who is willing to kill themselves for you? And there's nothing higher than you to give. And you already given yourself to Putana. And you say, okay, a birth in Braj, that's a higher thing. You already gave that to the Brajavasis. So what you will give to the Brajavasis? They are giving their whole, again, life, hearts, minds, bodies, family, everything is only for you. So Brahma said, I'm bewildered. I don't know. I am pondering this question. Actually, this verse he speaks in plural. He said, me, Brahma, Shiva, Narad, all this person, we don't know how to reply to that question. Do you know how to reply, Krishna? Brahma is saying. And Krishna doesn't reply. So this verse expresses Brahma's bewilderment, Brahma Vimohan, higher bewilderment than the original one. But also this verse expresses or creates Krishna's bewilderment. So Brahma Vimohan Lila concludes in Krishna Vimohan Lila. Because Krishna starts to think how to repay back the Vrajavasis. I cannot repay back. That's the conclusion he reaches, basically. He will conclude, I'm an eternal debtor to their love. That's who I am in connection to the Vrajavasis. So again, Brahma is asking this. We are in the 35th verse, 14th chapter, 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Krishna doesn't say anything. He enters into deep introspection. He will just reply, confirm the implications of this question almost 20 chapters after in the Bhagavatam. Chapter 32, in the zenith of the Bhagavatam, that will be the zenith also of Krishna's solution, if you will, to his problem. Of the zenith of Krishna's introspection. What's the zenith of the Bhagavatam? You tell me. Not only 10 canto. What is the zenith of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam? Rasa Lila or Rasa Panchadhyaya. The 5 chapters about Rasa Lila. So Krishna replies in the zenith is Rasa Panchadhyaya. And the zenith of the Rasa Panchadhyaya, we could say, is the Gopi Gita. We sang some verses before. So right after the Gopi Gita ends, Krishna reappears back. Remember, he was hiding behind the tamal tree to camouflage himself. He's the same color, same complexion, witnessing the kirtan of the gopis in separation and discovering the degree of their love reaching new heights and becoming curious about that. And all that in the again in the context of what's Radha experiencing and also the question of Brahma. How will I repay on the love of Radha? And that experience that I do not know, and the question of Brahma. So then, in the verse 22, 22nd verse, 32nd chapter of the 10th canto, Krishna is saying the famous verse, Napaliham nirabhadya samjayam, so sadhu krityam bhibudaya sattiva, jamava jandurja ragiha shrinkala, shambhrishya tadva pratiyata sadhana. Famous confession of Krishna. And Krishna is saying to the gopis, I cannot repay back your love for me. Let your own love be its own reward. That's the reward. I cannot even conceive how much is my debt. What to speak of paying it? No? Because I can tell you have a debt of $3 million. You will say, I cannot pay it. But if you ask me how much is the debt, they say, I'm still counting. It's unlimited. It's increasing at every moment. Every time I update the numbers, it's higher. But what speak of paying? You cannot even know how much you have to pay. So Krishna's acknowledging, no? He's contradicting himself. Because in the Gita he said what? Yatmam prabhayanti tamstadaiva vajamyaham. Fourth verse. No? A few verses after, we are studying today, fourth chapter, verse 9. Fourth chapter, verse 11, he's saying, as you approach me, I reciprocate. But here in the Vata, he's saying, I cannot reciprocate. As you approach me, I cannot reciprocate, he said to the gopi. The Gita said, as you approach me, I reciprocate. Here in the Bhagavad said to the gopi, as you approach me, I cannot reciprocate. Add the word not here. I remain an eternal debtor. Because you have renounced everything for my sake, exclusively for me. Especially saying this to the gopis, to Radha. I cannot do that. I have so many devotees I have to attend. I cannot just devote myself to you only. Have so many other devotees in Vrindavan, in Vaikuntha, here and there. But you are so much only focused on me. And the nature of your love for me, which is parakya bhav, entails that you have to reject everyone else to obtain me. You have to reject your husband, your kids, your mother-in-law. Only for me. Even other devotees of me, they don't have to reject anyone else. Now, my friends do not have to reject their families to be my friends. My parents do not have to reject their families to be my parents, but you have to reject everyone else to be my lover. So you have such a degree of dedication to me, exclusivity, one-pointedness, But I cannot do that. I cannot just limit to that because I'm God at the end of the day. I have so many devotees. So Krishna becomes embarrassed. Not like say, I'm so totally indebted. But of course, he's very noble, so he won't only say, so what to do? I'm indebted, so I cannot pay. Sorry, bye. Let's continue. He said, no, no. But nonetheless, I'll have to do something. And this comes by the Sanatana Goswami's explanation of this verse. Although I will never be able to repay back your love, and that's its own reward, and I want that reward, to taste that reward, that love you have is such a reward, not only for yourself, I want to make that my reward, I want to taste that myself. I'm curious about tasting that. That's what Krishna saw when the gopis were singing in separation, the bhav of Radha was flourishing to such a degree, I don't know what's that, I want to taste that. So some desires come into his mind. And at the same time, he has this debt of love. I cannot pay back, but I'll try. I have to do something. I cannot just remain with my arms crossed, say, I cannot repay. I'll try to give my life in service and will spend once in a day of Brahma. I cannot pay this even in the day of Brahma, but I'll try, he says. No? Once in a day of Brahma will come as a sadhu, trying to repay back your sadhuness. You are such sadhus, such saintly people, and you love me in such a way that I'll try to repay your saintlihood by becoming a saint myself. No? I'm not a saint in Vrindavan here. I'm a playboy. But I will appear as a saint, as a devotee. Mm-hmm. And I will dedicate my life to chant your glories, to spread your glories, to make devotees for you, especially as, of course, on top of that, speaking to Radha. Mm-hmm. And of course, all this converges into Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Satchinandan Gaur Hari ki jai. Krishna wanting to taste Radha Bhav, this remain desire, Sri Radha Yapranaya Mahiman, so on. Was the greatest of the love of Radha, was the beauty she perceives in me through that love, was the happiness she derives by perceiving that beauty in me through her love. I don't know what's that about. I need to taste that. Krishna is Rasik Seeker. He has to upgrade his title as the relisher of all mellows. And the depth of love I incur is so great, but I will appear as a sadhaka, as a sadhu, as a devotee. And I will establish your glories in the world. So my point, and here we are reaching our conclusion, you can see the implications of Janmashtami, the implications of the birth of Krishna in Vrindavan, as a Vrajavasi, interacting lovingly with his devotees. You play out fully the implications of Janmashtami, you end up in Gaur Purnima. No, those are the ultimate implications of Krishna Janmashtami. You have the need of Gaur Lilas, my Gurus would like to say. Gaur Lilas becomes a necessity when you understand what's Krishna Lila about and how some unfulfilled desires remain there that have to become accomplished somehow. So then we have Krishna, we have in Gaur Lila, we have Krishna realizing new purposes to his own birth during the Lila. In Krishna Lila, Krishna's there, I came as a Brajavasi, this is the purpose, is establishing Dharma, chastising miscreants, protecting my devotees, and this and that, and at one point is that, there's another purpose now. I find a new purpose, a new meaning to my life, coming here on earth. And Gaur Lila is a necessity to facilitate that, to make Krishna Lila successful, in the words of my Guru Maharaj. So we are celebrating that a day like today. We are celebrating today the fullest implications of Krishna's birth, now that he himself discovers in the midst of his Lila, which culminate in Gaur Lila. So we are celebrating all this a day like today. And this is really Tattvataha, again, the verse of the Gita saying, one who truly understands the purpose of my descent. So truly means you play out the thing from beginning to end. No? So in which is all this converges. So just to conclude, that person who then truly, Tattvataha, understands the birth of Krishna in all its features and the implications of that, again, the natural conclusion will be confirmed. We will converge into Gaur Lila. Gaur Lila is the Parishishta Lila of Braj, or the Braja Lila. Parishishta Lila means the appendix-like Lila. Parishishta means appendix, not the one in my stomach, but the appendix of a book. When a book is written, the book finished, But there is some, how do you say, afterthought that is not part of the book, but it's part of the book. It's one and different from the book, bit a bit. And helps make full circle with what the book is speaking about. So Braja Lila is there, Krishna's Lila is there, finished. But there, again, there's some thoughts in Krishna, as we see. He's still thinking how to repay, what to do. So an appendix is required. So Vyasadeva leaves his retirement as an author after writing the Bhagavatam. He says, I have to add an appendix to the Bhagavatam now. So he comes back as Vrindavanadas Thakur and reveals Chaitanya Bhagavat, the sequel to Bhagavatam, and Gaur Lila, the sequel of Krishna Lila, and Parishishta Lila, the appendix that makes Krishna Lila successful, that makes full circle with Krishna's birth and the real success of and the purpose of his birth. If not, Krishna won't be successful. We want Krishna to be successful, especially a day like today. So one last thing, with your permission, too, because there is something else in this idea of Tattva Daha, and it's us. So what do we have to be to do with all this? What's our role in all this, in such a glorious, inconceivable, incredible conception? All of us have a part to play in this. All of us are participants into Sri Krishna's Janmashtami. Not only by honoring Prasad later, but again, all this converges into Gaur Lila. Krishna Janmashtami takes us to Gaur Purnima. No? The birth of Krishna finds these new purposes that require Gaur Lila to happen. And Gaur Lila is Krishna tasting Radha Bhav. And it happens to be at the moment that the Yuga Avatar is required to come onto this earth. Again, we are speaking about a birth on earth. But the Yuga Dharma that Mahaprabhu is giving is mixed with his own experience of Radha Bhav. It becomes affected by that. So he's delivering that. The Yuga Dharma of this Kali, this Danya Kali, as we spoke the other day, is a special dispensation in which Mahaprabhu is given something very unique once in a day of Brahma. That's his own creation called Prem Sankirtan. When Prataparudra Maharaj asks, what's that Mahaprabhu and his followers are doing? Chaitanya Srishti e Prem Sankirtan. Sarvabhauma Vatacharya said, that's the exclusive creation of Sri Chaitanya. It's called Prem Sankirtan. Yuga Dharma is Harinam Sankirtan, but here this Yuga Dharma is Prem Sankirtan. No? Because it's a particular type of name coming straight from Golok with a specific disposition, Golokher Prema Dan Harinam Sankirtan. The Harinam Sankirtan coming from Mahaprabhu, straight descending from Golok with these particular preoccupations. And of course, Harinam Sankirtan has to do with Nam. And has to do with how Krishna is born also. Because, again, the ultimate consequence of the birth of Krishna, as we mentioned now, is that he needs to become Mahaprabhu. And the ultimate consequence of Krishna having to become Mahaprabhu, if you will, is that the whole Sankirtan Lila will come as an overflowing of that. And therefore, the ultimate consequence of Krishna's birth is us being here today. Because we wouldn't be here today without the Sankirtan of Mahaprabhu. And there will be no Sankirtan of Mahaprabhu if Krishna wouldn't have experienced his existential crisis in the Braja Lila. And that wouldn't happen if he wouldn't be born on earth. So in this way we are connecting, you know, Krishna's birth, Janmashtami, with a bunch of personalities like you here in the jungle of Costa Rica, speaking about all this, you know? Sprinkled and blessed, again, by Mahaprabhu's overflowing of his own experience becoming his prachar, his achar becomes his prachar, and he starts to not only sprinkle, but to inundate the whole world and touching our lives. That's why we are here. And this is that's the final meaning of Tattva Daha that I wanted to share today, to truly know the reason and nature of Krishna's birth has to include us in the picture. It cannot be an isolated narrative. Oh, very nice story. But it's just story. I have my own story. No, you don't have a separate story. You are to be part of that story. You are to be part of that agenda. So this is what Krishna says in the Gita in chapter 4, verse 9. Tattva Daha. If you truly understand why Krishna is coming, you will see yourself included in that, basically. That means truly understanding the reasons for Krishna's Divya Janma, or divine birth, and all the implications of him having such a divine birth in Braj, as a Brajavasi, with the Brajavasi, and so on. So we are, and which will be the result of that, going back to this verse of the Gita 4:9, for those who understand that truly, which means we as sadhakas here, and we understand truly means we try to fathom all its implications, somehow try to integrate them in our hearts, we will attain Him upon leaving our bodies. Mm-hmm. Or even before that, as Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, even during this body, you can already attain Him. Mm-hmm. Even by hearing this katha, by hearing Hari katha, Janmastami katha, by embracing by embracing Mahaprabhu's dispensation of Srinam, mm-hmm, we are there. They are non-different. So all this concludes in the word Srinam. Remember, we have been doing japa retreat all these days, so I wanted to keep the focus on Srinam in whatever discussions we may have done, so that's also included here, not only during the japa retreat, not only with Baladev Purnim, but here speaking about Janmastami, we are speaking about Srinam, how all this understanding properly of Krishna's birth concludes in Srinam. And make full circle like that. So in this way, as today Krishna is being born, Krishna also, the idea is that He will be born in our hearts when the proper stage is there. Of course, first we have to be born ourselves and to leave the womb of material energy. We are still in embryonic state. Still is something. We are embryos in sadhaka terms, so that's something. So again, when we, the more we live that, the more Srinam will make its advent, its descent in our lives. It's already doing that, and more and more. And again, we are celebrating today Janmashtami, not only celebrating Krishna was born, but celebrating the prospect, the possibility that He may be born in my heart. And that will be the real Janmashtami, the ultimate celebration, through the chanting. Again, Nam is not different from Krishna. So Nam is coming, Krishna is coming. And we want Him to host Him. That's what we are celebrating today, basically. No, we can have Krishna born in our hearts through the Nam, through the possibility of attaining Sudhanam, pure chanting, attaining Prem, engaging in the Prem Sankirtan, Lila of Mahaprabhu and our Parampara, extending that to us. So that's what we are celebrating today. Some reason for celebration. So, anyhow, some words I want to share with you today in this particular focus, trying to go deeper into the idea of what it truly means to celebrate Sri Krishna Janmashtami and the fruit of that. Sri Krishna Janmashtami ki jai. So, we already spoke quite a long time, but I don't know if there are any questions or comments you may like to share in connection to what we spoke today in relation to this topic. Yes?
I know that when you mentioned, like, when Krishna killed demons in his Leela, is actually Narayan. I don't really, like, understand that concept. What do you mean is Narayan? Like, is Narayan in, like, exhibiting himself as Krishna? Like,
yeah, like we mentioned, no? Krishna, generally, the functions of God is to establish dharma and counteract adharma. So counteracting adharma is another way of saying killing demons. Krishna is not doing that. In the sense of Krishna is only engaged in lila with his devotees. That's Krishna. So, but we see Krishna killing the demons. So how to explain that? So acharyas will say, when Krishna comes, all the other forms of God comes inside of him because he's the original form of God. He's even the origin of Narayan, of Vishnu, of God. No? So the God portion inside of him is the one doing that function, killing the demons, counteracting adharma. Krishna is not doing that. Although it seems externally, Krishna is absorbed in lila, interacting with the Vrajavasis. Incidentally, his Vishnu portion will do those things, dealing with those things that have to do mostly with Maya Shakti and so on. Krishna is way beyond that. That's a very, of course, unique, of course, conception of the divine. You know, because generally we speak about God, but here we are speaking about, again, God beyond God, of the source of God, being Krishna. You know? So that will be basically the explanation. Something else? There are also like 32 connected online. So devotees from different parts. I don't know if any of you have any questions. Yes. Jason.
So I'm just curious about that demon. So there's demon here. It's like light and dark. Are they the same or is this all different?
Well, the word demon, and I know, thanks for the question because it helps me to clarify the term. I should have done before, as I did before. We need always to update our glossary. And the word demon actually doesn't mean what sometimes we may think, because we may hear demon and who knows where our mind goes to. So basically the word demon in Sanskrit, asura. So asura means that which opposes the sura. And sura means saintly behavior. And to further illustrate what's the implication of that, asura. Asu in Sanskrit means, and it's similar than English, asu means like quickly, or may mean as soon as possible. So asu, as soon as possible. And ra is a brief explanation of ramante, which means to enjoy. So asura means I want to enjoy as soon as possible, implying I want to sell in a selfish way, I want to enjoy, and I don't care for the consequences of that, as soon as possible. There are different, it comes to mind one famous song, in English they once say, I want it all and I want it now. And in Argentina there is a worse one that says, I don't know what I want, but I want it now. So it has to do with this idea, you know, with not being patient, not being willing to pay the price for what you want, and not being considerate about others and about the consequence of your own actions, and just being carried by some selfishness that makes you basically an exploiter, and not caring for the consequences. So that's what we call as asura or demon, not necessarily someone with some horns or whatever, walking in four legs with some sulfur or whatever. So it has to do with a certain mentality, and all of us, any of us can fall into that for sure. No? So, and of course, the point is, as you mentioned, it's not necessarily that some people are the asuras and some people are the suras. They are the demons and they are the angels. I mean, of course there are people who are considerably 100% almost demons, although they have still some bright potential as any soul, and many people are fully percent saintly. But there is a mixture in between also. No? So it also speaks about tendencies inside of us. The very Bhagavad Gita begins with that, the first verse. Dharma kshetre kuru kshetre samavita yujutsabha. No? So dharma kshetre kuru kshetre speaks about two sides of the coin. No? In dharma kshetra, which is kuru kshetra, samavita yujutsabha pandavas mamakaschaiva kimakurvata sanjaya. Dhritarashtra is asking, what did my sons and the sons of Pandu did? So he creates this dichotomy. My children, the Kurus, and the sons of Pandu. So creating this duality of course, Kuru Pandavas is, besides being real people, they serve as symbolic to, if you want to put it, good and evil. So those tendencies are in us. The potential is in us for in both directions. Of course, our brightest potential, our darkest potential, as we spoke the other day, indirectly shedding light of our brightest potential. So when we just see a person who is totally evil, extremely degraded, that person is actually telling you how brilliant and saintly could become if that person will dovetail and use that energy in the proper direction. So when we say that Krishna comes to kill the demons, yeah, it refers, we could take it as being practical and immediate, refers to how God can purify ourselves, no need to point demons outside. Because actually many of our teachers, especially Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there's a long list of demons that Krishna killed. Many. 30-something, if I'm not mistaken. But each of them, he will mention, represent a certain anartha. Anartha means a certain bad tendency in us. So he was very quick to point, hey, all these demons that Krishna is killing have nothing to do with demons outside of you. Don't enter into that mood. All of them speak about things that obstacles that you have to overcome inside of you by chanting the name, which is no different from Krishna, and that's Krishna killing the demons, if you will. Now you are chanting the name of Krishna, and Krishna is purifying your heart. That's the demon killing, if you want to put it like that. Or sometimes Krishna is killing demons with Sudarshan. Sudarshan is like a weapon that God has, and it's the forms of a discus. So he throws that, and generally it's beheading people, one after another. So you may enter into a little bit like, not gore, but gory. Oh, let's call it scat and blood and heads rolling on the ground. But the weapon is called Sudarshana. So Sudarshana, Darshan means vision, and Su means proper. So Sudarshana means proper vision. So the idea is, the symbol there is not just let's cut heads, but means we may have wrong ideas about things, and generally those are in this section. It's our head that has a problem. Too much head.
Yes.
So Krishna cuts the head. Cuts, because there are wrong ideas there. It's not that literally he will cut your head. It's just, I'll replace your misunderstanding with proper ideas, with right vision. So it's important that we land towards also the interpretative level of Shastra, and not just literally reading everything. Because if not, as you say the other day, we can become serial killers. Let's cut heads and tongues and all this stuff. So it has more about to do with conversion, transformation of our inner self, as we have been speaking all these days as well. So anyhow, some words in that connection. There's one brief question here from Brajahari Prabhu. He's saying, Krishna is a Brajavasi. He's quoting that idea that we share. He's saying, where can I read about Krishna being born from Yashoda? Well, there are a few sources. One of them that we have been sharing some days ago is the Gopal Champu of Srila Jiva Goswami. Then Srila Jiva Goswami, there he explains that in some length. And of course, I will also recommend mostly the commentaries of the Goswamis to the Bhagavatam verses which deal with Krishna's birth. Now, of course, they do not mention, the Bhagavatam overtly is not mentioning Krishna is born from Yashoda, but in verses like the ones I quoted today from the Gopi Gita, or those verses where the word Atmaja is coming, or even those verses where they just say that Krishna was born from Devaki and Nanda, the Goswamis will be quick to clarify in which sense Krishna was born from them, and in which sense he's actually the son of Nanda and Yashoda. So one should do that research of those verses in the Bhagavatam and look for the corresponding purport by Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, mostly Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Those are the main ones who will focus in that direction. So I think with that you have some homework, Rajahari. Okay. Anything else? We'll conclude here then. We have a long, beautiful day ahead as well. So we'll continue with some other activities later. We'll announce them in time. So thank you so much to all for your presence, your association, all of you all as well connected online. Shri Krishna Janmashtami ki jai, Shri La Gurudev ki jai, Shri Man Mahaprabhu ki jai, Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Prem Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrind ki jai, Gaur Premanand Haribo.